Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and editorial meeting. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and editorial review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit our webpage. That's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and editorial review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on What If when we come back. Well, Charles Lyell, one of the pillars of modern geology, published his principles of geology in the early 1800s. Lyell's concepts are so widely accepted and held today that most people who believe these concepts don't even know who it was that originated them. But it's from Charles Lyell's system of reasoning that a doctrine of origins has been devised. And it's done by simply projecting all of the natural processes that we observe today back through time indefinitely. Catastrophes like Noah's flood are strictly ruled out. And this process is called science. Well, listen to this. Here's some science for you. A headline says, "The sun is shrinking." It was a Newswire report. And it made this surprising statement. The sun's diameter appears to have been decreasing by about 0.1% per century. Scientists have been watching now for more than 100 years, and the evidence is now conclusive. Every hour, the sun is shrinking by about 5 feet. Now, if the sun is shrinking 0.1% per century, then that totals about 1% per thousand years, 1% per millennium. And if the sun existed only 100,000 years ago, it would have been double its present diameter. Then, if you go back 20 million years, the surface of the sun would have been touching the Earth. And as far as researchers can tell, this rate of shrinkage has been constant since the origin of the sun. Now, what did our teachers tell us about the extinction of dinosaurs? Wasn't that 65 million years ago? And then they tell us here, 20 million years ago, based upon the arithmetic, the surface of the sun would have been touching the Earth. Now, you know, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to do the math on these kinds of pseudo-scientific lies. And that's just one more of the many examples of evolutionary propaganda that masquerades under the title science. And this is one of the many lessons in my Mosaic Law School that I conduct here twice a year at the law school in Isabella, Missouri. If you'd like more information, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package? That's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge. Doesn't cost anything. Why don't you call right now and order yours? The number is 417-273-4967. If you're online, go to the website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and then send an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. What if? Remember, that's a part of our lexicon. It's a part of our language here in America. We always talk about, well, what if? What if the stock market collapses? What if we go into another depression? What if George Bush is impeached? We like to envision the consequences of these events. I mean, those would be headline-making events. I mentioned last time General Motors is going upside down. The state of Michigan, Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio won't be very far behind them. The city of Detroit's out of money. Their bonds are junk. They're going into bankruptcy. There are going to be some big events transpire, and so I thought, why don't we take a look at, well, what if? What if? Now, here's a story that comes out of Germany. It comes out of the German magazine Cicero in its latest edition, and it's being reported here in the International Forecaster, the April 2006 number one edition. If you'd like to check this out, why don't you go to internationalforecaster.com, www.theinternationalforecaster.com. That's Bob Chapman's newsletter. And he reports this on page 17. Listen to this story. It says, "Saudi Arabia is working secretly on a nuclear program with Pakistan's help," says the German magazine Cicero in its latest edition. It says that during the Hajj pilgrimages to Mecca in 2003, 2004, and 2005, Pakistani scientists posed as pilgrims to come to Saudi Arabia. They spent several weeks in Saudi Arabia, and Saudi scientists have been working since the mid-1990s in Pakistan. Military analyst John Pike says that Saudi barcodes can be found on half of Pakistan's nuclear weapons because it is Saudi Arabia that financed the Pakistani atomic nuclear program. Cicero says the Saudis have set up a program in El Salajil, south of Riyadh, a secret underground city and dozens of underground silos for missiles. And we're sure this will go over like a lead balloon in Israel. Have you heard that story before? I hadn't. I didn't know anything about it. It's like my report last week on underground water. I didn't know there was a problem with underground water until somebody brought it to my attention. We researched it out, and sure enough, boy, there's a story that ought to make the hair on the back of your neck stand out. But this Saudi story also has the portent for nuclear World War III. Remember, the biggest oil pool in the world sits under Saudi Arabia. In fact, it's around half the oil in the world sits under these countries. Saudi Arabia, I think, has 35%. In fact, it's more than half. Saudi Arabia has 35% of the world's oil pool, Iran 10%, and Iraq 25%. That's 70% in those three countries. Then you've got all these little emirates that are around the Arabian Peninsula. I don't know what their percentage is, but it's a little bit. The United States, I think we have 5% of the world's oil reserves. We use 25% of the world's oil, but we have about 5% of the reserves. China now is working their hearts out, trying to industrialize, so are the Indians. And India and China have about one-third of the world's population. One-third of the world's population. And they want to live like we Americans, Britons, and French live. They all want automobiles. They all want houses in the country. Now, they can't have them simply because there aren't enough raw materials on planet Earth to build all of that kind of infrastructure. And there's not enough water in the aquifers to feed all those people that want to live in all those houses that they dream about. And it has the portent of some big wars. But what if our government reported to us through the news media what these problems are so that you and I can make some intelligent and rational decisions about the way we should be planning our lives over the next 10 or 20 years? For instance, I didn't know about the shortage of the world's water supply in the aquifers until a couple of weeks ago. I now am armed with facts from which I can make rational, intelligent decisions for the Gordons, the Gordon Farm, and the future that we have here in the Ozarks, in our little niche in the world, and in our little niche in the world's economy, so that I can provide water for my family without unduly burdening my neighbors, who also are drawing their water out of the same aquifer. Over the next 5 years, I will wean myself from the aquifers and from the wells, and I will start using surface water. I mentioned this story to you last week. Out in California, there is a concerted effort to tear down a dam out in Yellowstone. Not Yellowstone, it's Yosemite Park. There's a big park out there called Yosemite where these big redwood trees are, and up in a niche of the park at about the 7,000, 8,000 foot level, there's a dam called the Hetchy Hetchy Dam. And the environmentalists out there in California want to tear that dam down. Now, here's what that dam was built for. After the 1906 earthquake in San Francisco, they didn't have enough water to fight the fires and the city burned down, so they said, what we need is a reliable water source and a water supply. So in 1911, they built this dam up in Yosemite Park. It sits at 8,000 feet, and it runs downhill. There's a pipeline, 150-mile pipeline, that runs from this dam all the way to San Francisco. On the way, it services about 30 cities. About 1 million people get their water out of this Hetchy Hetchy Reservoir. Now, when you drill holes in the ground, you suck the water out of the aquifers, and everywhere in the world where we're doing that, the aquifers are being drawn down and going dry. 50% of the world's population are getting their water out of these aquifers, which over the next 15 or 20 years are going to be consumed. So the only logical conclusion is that out of the 286 cubic or 1,000 cubic miles of water that rains down on the earth, we should have been developing these surface waters rather than the subterranean waters. But for some reason, we got off on the subterranean waters rather than the surface waters. And as a result of that, about half of the world's people and about half of the world's agriculture is now dependent upon these aquifers, which are going dry. And when they collapse, agriculture will collapse with them, and half the people in the world will be thrown out of food. What if we all had been told this back in 1950? Would you, would I, would any sane, rational person have made the decision to bore holes into the aquifers knowing what the outcome was going to be in 50 to 100 years? I think that I would have made different decisions. I know I drilled some wells. I know I irrigated. I know I was one of the people causing the problem. Now that I see what it is, I can now take sane, intelligent action and correct it. I'm not on a crusade. I'm not trying to save the Hetchy Hetchy Dam. It doesn't bother me. But 1 million people that get their water, surface water, out of that reservoir are going to have to bore holes in the ground and take it out of the ground, which makes them dependent upon this groundwater, which is a finite resource, which is being drawn down out here in the Midwest at 10 times the recovery rate. And when the governor of Kansas suggested that they reduce their consumption of water out of the Oglala Aquifer, he has been met with stiff resistance, and if he continues on, he's going to be impeached. He certainly isn't going to be reelected. I mean, that's the political kiss of death. And yet, he's simply telling these people, boys and girls, we have to make some sane, rational, intelligent decisions. And so I bring up the subject, gee, what if We took a look at the facts and then made decisions based upon those facts rather than ignoring the inevitable, which is going to be very, very painful. If you think closing it down today is going to be painful, can you imagine what's going to happen when it just goes dry? I went through that here when my well went dry. You just don't have any water. In our case, it wasn't that we didn't have any. We didn't have enough. So I went out and drilled another well like we were taught to do, but now I find that, gee, in 30 years, this new well that I just drilled is going to be dry because all my neighbors around here, they're all drilling down to 500 feet. They're all going to be sucking out of the aquifer that I'm drawing down on. And while we've got this new lease on life, this new source of water, we've gone from 40 feet to 500 feet between 1924 and 2004. About 80 years, we've gone from 40 feet to 500. It looks like to me that in the next 30 years, which is just about what we've been doing in the past, we'll be drilling down to 1,000. We're not getting the facts that we need to make sane, balanced, rational decisions. Let me give you another interesting little story here. Did you listen to the opening ad? The sun is shrinking by 5 feet a day. You know, I don't think the average person thinks very much about the size of the sun or the fact that the sun is shrinking by 5 feet a day, but there might be two or three of you out there that gave it a thought. But for those of you that haven't, listen up and let me describe this scenario for you. The sun is a big piece of real estate. If you compared it to the earth, it would be like comparing a basketball with a marble. It might even be bigger than that. The sun is about 750,000 miles in diameter. Diameter means the distance from one side to the other of a sphere right through the middle. So if you took an orange and you drilled a hole, you know, from the one side to the other, and it was 3 inches, you'd say that the orange is 3 inches in diameter. Well, the sun is 750,000 miles in diameter. And planet Earth is about, I don't know, 6,000 or 7,000 miles in diameter, 8,000, something like that. You see the difference? I mean, it's like night and day. 750,000 miles in diameter, and the Earth's about 7,000 or something on that order. Now, when I was a kid going to school, they told me that the sun out there has been burning since the Big Bang, which was about, you know, 4.5 billion years ago. That's what Carl Sagan said. Billions and billions of years ago. You heard the story. You read it in National Geographic every month. And as a layperson, you know, I'm listening to the story. I read National Geographic, and I try to picture these billions and billions of years. And then just being an old country boy, I just sometimes sit down and do the arithmetic. And I find that every time I do the arithmetic, I find that the story, based upon these numbers, is as phony as a $3 Federal Reserve note. Think about it for a second. Remember this story here, the sun is shrinking? Well, your tax dollars have been supporting universities and astrophysicists and building great big telescopes. And NASA now has this big Hubble telescope out in space. God knows how much these things cost. It's a ton of money. Lots of money. Yep, an average Joe Sixpacks like us, we couldn't afford to put a satellite up into orbit. And if you're an average truck driver like I am, you wouldn't even care about doing that anyway. Hell, even if you had $1 billion, you probably wouldn't spend it on putting a satellite into orbit so that you could look out into space and try to calculate how many light years out there you can be looking. But, you know, there's people that like to do that. They don't have the money to do it either. So they go to the government, and the government comes to you and me, and they take the money from us. They call it income tax, or they can call it excise tax, or, you know, they've got labels for all these taxes, and they take this money back to Washington, and then they dole it out to universities and scientists and one thing and another. Well, these guys, for the last 100 years, have been watching the sun with your tax money. And it's quite a story, and they've got instruments, and they spend lots of money on these instruments, and they've been looking up at the sun, and they get special goggles so that they can look at it, and they get special instruments so that they can measure the sunspots and all of these auras that come off of the sun. You know, it's a hell of a story. Just read National Geographic some week. You know, they're doing a hell of a job. Well, anyway, as the story goes, they've been measuring this for 100 years, and now they come to the conclusion that this thing is burning up at the rate of 5 feet per hour, 5 feet an hour. Well, my Texas Instruments model EL1197G3 Sharp Texas Instruments computer, hell, it won't even go out there into the billions and billions. It just goes into the millions. When it gets out to billions and billions, it just turns up zeros. But hell, even an old farmer like me can figure some of this out. So I just took 5 feet times 24 hours. That's 120 feet. 120 feet. Now, 120 feet, you know, that's a 100-foot tape. I can relate to that 100-foot tape story. That's 5 25-foot contractor tapes. Stretch them out, 5 of them, that's 120 feet. Well, that's how much the sun is burning up, you know, every day. So I just multiplied that times 7. My God, that's 840 feet in a week. 840 feet, you know, hell, that's one side of a 40. You know, you walk down one side of a 40 and then down the other side and, you know, checking your line fence, you know, a 40 down one side and down two sides and down three sides and down four sides. Well, that's a mile. To walk around a 40 takes a mile. Well, that's 840 feet. Now, we could do that times 30, and that's how much? 25,200 feet. My God, that's 5 miles. 5 miles in a month. Are you starting to get the drift of this? Let's see if I'm right there. That's 30. I'm just going to do this again. That's 5 times 24 times 7. You know, and then we could back up over here. If it's 5 feet an hour, 5 times 25, 24. That's how much it is in a day. And well, that's 120. Let's take 120 times 30. That's 3,600 feet a month, 3,600 feet a month. Now, that's a little over half a mile. 2,600 feet, you know, is a half a mile. So if we had 3,600 feet in 1 month, we could take 3,600 times 12 in a year, 43,200 feet a year that the sun is burning up. Now, it's big. It's real big. Remember, it's 750,000 miles in diameter. So if you took off 43,200 feet, let's just divide that by 5,280, and that's 8.18 miles. So it's burning up at the rate of 8 miles a year. Now, and we're getting down to the nitty-gritty. So let's plug in 750,000. I can do that in my Sharp Texas Instruments machine here, 750,000. And let's just divide that by 8. And you know what that tells us? In 93,750 years, the sun is going to be burned up like a match. Boys and girls, if you believe the Big Bang Theory from Carl Sagan and all of these National Geographic editors, and that when the Big Bang occurred 4.5 billion, now that's with a B, like boy, billion years ago. And let's see what else they tell us here about this. They say, well, as far as they can tell, this 5 feet an hour has been going on for 4.5 billion years. You see, if you follow Charles Lyell's theory, and here's the way the theory works. You go out to Arizona, you go up to the Grand Canyon, you look down into the hole, and it's a mile deep. And they estimate that every 100 years, the Colorado River scours out about 1 inch. That's 1 inch per century. Cut that. So about every 1,000 years, it digs it down a foot. Well, my God, if you go 5,000 feet, then it's an inch per century. That's 5,000 times 100, isn't it? So it took 500,000 years for the Colorado River to dig that hole from the top down to the bottom. Can you follow that? 500,000 years. It's only half a million. Now, here's the problem. I was watching Kent Hovind's tapes over here, and this guy Kent Hovind now is one of these creation guys. He's a Baptist. He's a religious guy. He wants to tell you that the Bible is true, accurate, and correct, and evolution is full of prunes. I don't know. I'm just a reporter. So I was watching his tape, and he was talking to a guy on an airplane, and the guy on the airplane said that he was an evolutionist, and Kent Hovind said he was a creationist, and Kent Hovind asked him the question. He said, do you know about the Grand Canyon? The guy looked at him and said, yeah, yeah. And he said, did you know that the Grand Canyon, is lower where it goes in than where it comes out at the other end? And the guy said, no, I didn't know that. He said, yeah. It's called the Kaibab Uplift. Kaibab Uplift. So if you go up to the north rim or the south rim, you know, where all of the park buildings are, it's 5,000 feet. You just walk up to the rim. You look down in there. The guide tells you it's 5,000 feet down there. Okay. Well, obviously, you have to be up at 5,000 feet to be looking down 5,000 feet where the river is going through at the bottom. And he asked this guy, he said, did you know that water runs downhill? Did you know that water runs downhill? And the guy said, yeah, yeah. I'm a plumber. I can tell you that. You know, water runs downhill, paydays on Friday. That's what you have to know to be a plumber. Paydays on Friday, water runs downhill. Now, picture this, boys and girls. Where you're standing here at the buildings at the south rim, you know, when you take the train up there, you know, they got a steam train takes you up there, you know, the little sightseeing trip. Okay. Well, that piece of real estate that you're standing on right there is lower than where the river comes out down at Las Vegas. Now, what they're telling us that we should believe is that the Colorado River carved out that canyon over about 500,000 years at about 1 inch per century. That's what we're being told. Well, go back 500,000 years, standing there then at the south rim, the river at about 5,000 feet altitude, right there, you can see the river, must have been up 5,000 feet off the bottom. So it had to be coming across the top there, didn't it? Okay, well, the river runs west and south, and the further west and south you go, the higher the landmass gets. Did you know that? So now, when we read the Bible and it says it was a worldwide flood and the waters were assuaging back and forth across the landmass, it makes more sense. You could understand better, it would seem like to me, that canyon would be carved out by gigantic volumes of water rather than by that little river running through down at the bottom, the way Charles Lyell described it. He says that catastrophes like the flood are strictly ruled out because they devised a simple remedy. They said, you take a look at what you're looking at, and that's the river today, scouring it out at the rate of 1 inch every 100 years, and that's the way it's always been forever and ever in the past. Nobody was standing there 500,000 years ago to verify that, but they assume. I don't think that assumptions have much to do with science, but that's what they tell us in National Geographic. That's what this newspaper article tells us. So I got to come along and say, gosh, what if the Bible is true? And this story that we read in the newspaper, you know, I'm not sure that you average housewives, truck drivers, and plumbers, and carpenters, and electricians are paying attention or doing the arithmetic, but I haven't seen a single case yet where when you do the arithmetic that they give you in the article, that it bears out in reality. Because the bottom line is pretty straightforward. These evolution guys tell you that the dinosaurs died out 65 million years ago. So if you take a look at the size of the sun today, 750,000 miles in diameter, and you add 5 feet to it every day for 100,000 years, I just did it for you the other direction. It's actually 93 years, but in less than 100,000 years, the sun would be 1.5 million miles in diameter. It would be double its present size. So if you just kept doubling the size of the sun and you go back 20 million years, the sun would be 93 million miles, actually 100 million miles in diameter. Boys and girls, from where we're standing today on planet Earth to the sun is only 93 million miles. The numbers don't bear out. And these people all have letters after their names, and I can't help but wonder, you know, what if these people actually did the arithmetic before they wrote these articles and then printed them in the National Geographic as if it's the gospel? They've gotten away with it for 100 years because they sent all of us to public school, and hell, we can't count, so we can't contradict them. But you'd think that those scientists themselves would do the arithmetic and say, hey, Bob, these numbers don't jive. Why don't we change our theory so that it at least fits the arithmetic in case one of these dummies buys a sharp computer? Because, you know, they all know that we couldn't do this math longhand, but hell, I've got this sharp computer. Boys and girls, the sun has not been burning at a constant rate for the last 20 million years, because if it has been, there would not be any Earth. There wouldn't be Earth or Venus or Mercury, because they would have already been consumed. All right, so what if these guys told us the truth? We probably wouldn't believe in evolution. I'm not sure we'd believe in the Bible or the Quran or Buddha or anybody else. I'm not pushing anyone one way or the other. I'm just telling you, these guys are lying to us. Now, we can measure the shrinkage of the sun today, and it's 5 feet an hour. All you got to do is work in both directions, and you don't have to be very smart. Hell, I'm as dumb as a box of rocks, and with my little sharp computer over here, I can do that, and I'll bet you could too. Let me give you a surprise here. You're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. And the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the Law School and ask for it. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are going to reciprocate. Most of these authors and publications cited and used on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily 100% endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you do hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, talking about what if. What if? Got to thinking the other day, what if polygamy was legalized in America? How would that change our society? Now, it used to be illegal in America to practice sodomy. It used to be legal to practice polygamy. But the religious people, I assume the Christians, got involved in this back in 1876, and they decided that this polygamy thing was really bad. It's bad, wicked, terrible, awful, evil, and it needs to be eradicated. And so they enacted federal legislation, which was soon taken up by our Supreme Court in a case called Reynolds versus United States back in 1878. It's called the Reynolds case, in which the Supreme Court upheld the Congress in their conclusion, in their legislation, outlawing polygamy. Now, what I wanted to do here was to bring to your attention that polygamy in the Bible is not outlawed. It's a social status created by God Almighty Himself. Now, not everybody practices polygamy, because if everybody practiced polygamy, then every man would have two wives, or 5, 10, or 11, or 15. And that physically isn't possible with the number of females that are born. Although there are more females born than males on average, it isn't 2, 3, or 4 to 1. It's only about 1% more. 1%. Now, in the Bible, there are 24 cases of polygamy. One very famous case of polygamy was one of the old patriarchs, a guy by the name of Jacob. He was the grandson of Abraham, the son of Isaac. He had a brother by the name of Esau. Esau had two wives. That's polygamy. But Jacob had four wives. That's twice as much polygamy as his brother. And then there was the case of David, you know, King David, the famous guy, you know, that stole this woman named Bathsheba. You know, you've heard of David and Bathsheba. You probably saw that in the movies. Well, he had six wives. And there's one guy in the Bible, his son. This is David's son, Solomon. He had, I think it was 300 wives and 700 concubines, or he had 700 wives and 300 concubines. I kind of forget the ratio there. Now, a concubine is a wife, just for your information. But she's a kind of a different kind of wife. She's a wife whose children do not inherit, which makes all the sense in the world. You know, if you've got five wives and five concubines, that'd be 10. You'd have to divide your inheritance up 10 ways. If you've got five wives that have children, then you divide it up five ways, and then the five wives that are concubines, they don't get anything. Their children don't get anything. They don't inherit. So that's probably unfair, and God was spaced out or something that day when he came up with that law. I'm just a reporter, so don't get mad at me. I'm just reporting that that's the way the game is played. Well, anyway, there's 24 of these cases in the Bible, all of them legal. In fact, God said to David one day, talking to this guy, he said, hey, dummy, I gave you Saul's wives, plural, plus your own wives. David took over after a guy by the name of Saul, and he got his three wives, plus he had three wives, totaling six. Anyway, the moral to the story is polygamy is legal and lawful, and there's nothing unscriptural about it. We made it illegal. Now, there's another side to the coin. The same God that made polygamy legal made sodomy and bestiality illegal. In fact, he punishes them with capital punishment. So if you're a sodomite, the penalty is death. And sodomites were always looked down on in society. You know, they were perverts. And today, they're not. See, today, a sodomite is protected by the Civil Rights Act. And I'm just suggesting what if. Because if you're going to make sodomy legal, if it's okay and 65% of Americans agree that what goes on in the bedroom of two consenting adults is nobody's business, 65%. And in the case of Bill Clinton, it was 72%. 72% said that what goes on under Bill Clinton's Oval Office desk is nobody's business but him and Monica. Okay, if that's the case, then why have we outlawed this legal, this scriptural legal polygamy and put people in jail? I had a student here one time. His dad was arrested in 1945 and sentenced to 5 years in prison for practicing polygamy. Now, the worst thing that can happen with polygamy is that you've got one man who has two, four, or more wives. These people have children within the family, and they have a father, and they have a mother, and they raise these children, and then they go out into the community, and then they multiply, and it seems to fulfill the biblical injunction to be fruitful and multiply. Carried to its ultimate conclusion, if you kept doing that over and over, generation after generation, you know what would happen? The whole world would be overflowed by a human tidal wave of population if you kept doing that. And that's about where we're at today, and we're not even practicing polygamy. We're practicing monogamy, and the birth rate's 3% or more worldwide. Now, let's take a look at the sodomy over here. Let's suppose, and these sodomites, they say, well, I can't help it because I was just born that way. But if that's the case, and they're just born that way, then they don't need to go out and recruit your sons and daughters for their nefarious activities, then, do they? Because there should be enough sodomites that are just naturally born, unless, of course, they're recruited. Now, that would require something. Now, that's because sodomites do not reproduce. Two boys living together can practice any kind of sexual conduct they want, but they can't reproduce. And two girls, they can practice whatever sexual activity that they think is good or right or they want to practice, but they can't produce any offspring either. So if you carried that to its ultimate conclusion and you got everybody in the world to practice sodomy, the ultimate end would be the complete destruction of the human race. That's the ultimate end of it. And then there's a couple of stories in the Bible about that. There's one famous one called Sodom and Gomorrah, and these were two hotbeds, kind of like San Francisco and New Orleans, hotbeds of sodomite activity. And God, not being very kind and not being very gentle, rained fire and brimstone down on these two cities and killed everybody in them. Killed everybody. Kind of like he did with New Orleans, except that he wasn't near as mad about New Orleans as he was about Sodom and Gomorrah, because there was 1, 2, 3, 4 survivors out of Sodom and Gomorrah, and one of them didn't meet the criteria, and she died. So there was only 3 actual survivors out of these two cities, and Josephus said there was 100,000 people. 100,000. 3 of them survived. That's 3 over 100,000. So I just thought, well, what if the churches and the preachers in the country were to point that out to you parishioners? 65% of you go to church every Sunday. 65% of you also believe that what goes on in the bedroom is just their business and nobody else's. And these same preachers tell you that polygamy is wicked and evil, but sodomy is righteous and good. And it would seem like to me, and they call themselves Christians, and if they're kind of like Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton, I saw him more than once, you know, on the news, and he'd be coming out of church on Sunday carrying a Bible under his arm. You know, the same Bible that has that story about Sodom and Gomorrah in Genesis 18. Same one that has that same story about polygamy, you know, about Jacob and David and the other 22 guys that were practicing polygamy with God's blessing. And it just seems like to me, what if we actually had preachers that would tell us those stories? I'm just a crummy plumber, so I'm not here to preach at you. I'm just here to report to you that it seems peculiar to me. There's another thing that seems kind of peculiar while we're on the subject of the Bible. I took a look in the scripture one day, and I found that there are 24 crimes in the scripture that God requires the death penalty for. 24. Now, we're all pretty familiar with treason, you know. You got this guy, Massawi, and, you know, he was in on this conspiracy to blow up the Trade Center and crash an airplane into the White House, and so they said, well, he should be given the death penalty. I'm not here to defend the guy. I'm just here to point out that, you know, when you get involved in killing a bunch of people or treason or something like that, you know, the civil authorities, they get kind of less kind and less gentle and want to kill you. So it's pretty common for murder, you know. Kidnapping. I remember that there was a guy that kidnapped Charles Lindbergh's baby back about 1930-something or other, back in the 30s, and his name was Bruno Hauptmann, and they took him out and they killed him for kidnapping. So murder and kidnapping, that's a capital felony there. And then, let's see, witchcraft. Now, there was a time here in America that witchcraft was kind of frowned upon, and they used to take witches out, and we haven't done this in this country for a long time. They used to take witches out, though, and burn them at the stake. So you probably heard of witchcraft. That's 3. And then, you know, you go on down the line over here. Let's see. Is there another one here? I don't know if they've ever killed any sodomites. I don't think so. And there was a time when blasphemy, you just saw this the other day, you know, over in Afghanistan, there's a Muslim over there. He converted to Christianity. He was a Muslim, and he decided he wanted to be a Christian. And they said, that's blasphemy against Allah, and we want to kill that guy. We want to kill him. Well, Christians used to do that too, mainly the Catholic Christians. You know, if you didn't follow the Catholic dogma and you wanted to get kind of Protestant, they'd want to take you out and kill you. So blasphemy, religious people get that way. They get kind of violent. And then, you know, there's just not much else over here that, oh, rape, that's another one. Once in a while, used to be in this country, if you raped some woman, they'd want to take you out and kill you, especially if you're black raping a white woman, they'd want to kill you. But if you're a white man raping a black woman, that was okay. That was okay. At least down in the Bible Belt, down in the South, not exactly clear why it is that white men can rape black women and that's okay, but when black men rape white women, that's bad. I'm not quite sure what the difference is there. But, you know, if you take a look at this, there's about 5 or 6 things that you could probably readily recognize that have been, at least in historical times, capital felonies. But I looked through the Bible, and I found 24. Listen to this. Murder, smiting of parents. So if you were a smart-mouth, pimply-faced, punk-ass, teenage kid, 15 years old, and you slapped your mother, God recommends that you be taken out and stoned to death. I got to thinking, well, what if we actually followed that principle? You'll see it in Exodus chapter 21, verse 15. It's the fifth commandment. You know, honor your father and mother. And if you don't, and you get uppity with them, they take you out and stone you to death. What would happen if you actually did that? How many gangs would you have in Phoenix or Los Angeles? I don't know. I don't think that you'd have near as many. I remember I was raised in a family like that. Now, they didn't take me out and stone me to death. But my dad, he used to grab me, you know, 4 or 5 times, I can remember. He'd throw me up against the wall. You bounce off the wall, fall on the floor. He whips off his belt and beats you within an inch of your life. I never did hit him. And then, of course, kidnapping, number three. And then cursing of parents. And listen, you didn't have to hit them. You just had to get lippy. Cursing. I mean, if you just said, you know, why don't you kiss off, you old crow? That's Exodus 21:17, Leviticus 20, verse 9, and Matthew 15, verse 4. Take them out and stone them to death. And I thought, well, gosh, what would happen if we actually did that here in America? I mean, if you took these teenagers out, you know, these wisecracking punks from the gangs, you know, and they get lippy with their parents and so on, took them out and stoned them to death, what kind of a society would you have? Then there's abortion. And of course, that's been legalized now in the United States. We have legal abortions. We want abortions. That's a death penalty. Exodus 21, verses 22 through 25, and Leviticus 20, verses 1 through 5 prohibit abortion. It's against the law. It's a capital felony. We've legalized it in this country. Then there's negligent property liability, which results in death. That's in Exodus 21, verses 28 and 29. If I had a bull here on my property and that bull ran you down and killed you, you know what the penalty would be? They'd take me out and stone me to death because I didn't keep my bull from killing you. Of course, today we have homeowners insurance, takes care of things like that. Then there's the daylight shooting of a thief, which results in death. You could shoot a thief at night, but not in the daytime, because the penalty for stealing isn't death, but you could kill him at night. That's in Exodus 22, verses 2 and 3. Witchcraft, if you practiced witchcraft, that would get you killed. Yeah, witches weren't tolerated. God himself ordered the killing of witches. Of course, I'm not sure that many people could identify a witch today, but then just wanted you to know that God was all in favor of killing witches. And then there's bestiality. Those are people that have sexual relations with dogs and donkeys and horses and cows and sheep and so on, pigs. That's a capital felony. That's also punishable by death. And idolatry, you know, violating the first commandment, Exodus 22:20 and Deuteronomy 17, verses 1 through 7. You practice idolatry, you worship some other god other than the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and the people in the community take you out and stone you to death. Those are the religious guys. Profaning the Sabbath. I mean, if you worked on Saturday, they take you out and stone you to death. Adultery. If you went out and was dinging your neighbor's wife, like Bill Clinton, you know, why, they take him out and kill him. Why, in our country, we'd be out of a president. Well, except for George. I'm not sure what George does. Incest. You know, today, you've got this thing of incest. You've got these fathers who are having sexual relations with their daughters, or with their sons, I guess it doesn't make any difference. That's called incest. That's punishable by death. Sodomy, punishable by death. Marriage of a man to both a mother and her daughter. There was a guy named Woody Allen. He married a wife, and then he went out and had sexual relations with the daughter. Incest. That's punishable by death. Perverts and perversion, it wasn't allowed. Blasphemy, that's treason against God. That's a crime. That's punishable by death. False prophets. God, that'd get half the preachers in America. We take them out and stone them to death. And the test is, they give us a prophecy, you know, like California is going to fall in the ocean, and California doesn't fall in the ocean. Well, that's a false prophet, so you take them out and stone him. What would happen? What if you punished these guys and you actually carried these laws out? You wouldn't have any more false prophets. You know, you wouldn't have people that were having sexual relations with mothers and daughters. You wouldn't have any sodomy. You wouldn't have incest. You wouldn't have adultery. You wouldn't have Sabbath breaking. You wouldn't have idolatry, bestiality, witchcraft, negligent property liability, abortion, cursing parents, kidnapping, smiting of parents, or murder. Because one of two things would happen. You know, either one, you'd run out of people to stone, or the survivors would wake up to reality and stop committing the acts. Now, when was the last time you committed any of these acts? There's a couple, three, like oppressing widows. God comes along and he says, you oppress a widow or an orphan, and I'll kill you, and I'll make your children orphans. I've seen that happen a couple of times. Not often, but once in a while. Usury is a violation of Ezekiel 18, 5 through 14. Shall a usurer live? God, that'd wipe out the banking industry. Can you imagine that? We'd take all the bankers out and stone them to death. Rape, all the rapists would be killed. Whoredom, all the prostitutes. And every time we catch one, and here's the other half of it. Every time you catch a prostitute, don't you catch some man with her? You take them both out and stone them. I don't know why it got this way, but somehow or another, in Christian philosophy, and you saw it here with Monica Lewinsky and Bill Clinton, I always thought, you know, what if we treated women equally with men? Or better yet, what if we treated men equally with women? See, when this news broke that Bill Clinton was dinging this woman named Monica Lewinsky there in the Oval Office, it made Bill Clinton a stud, and it made Monica Lewinsky a slut. Women who are sexually loose are called whores, sluts, tramps, and pigs, in that order. I've never heard that appellation placed on any man. You know, you look at John Kennedy. Whoo, you know, that John Kennedy, hey, he was dinging Marilyn Monroe. He's a real stud. We make heroes out of these men who are out here practicing adultery. But then we want to paint A's on women and we want to brand them as being some kind of lowlife, don't we? Well, you didn't get that out of the Bible. You didn't get that from God. I think you got that from guys like Jerry Falwell and Oral Roberts. I think you got that from those religious guys out there, didn't you? I don't want to blame it on those guys per se, but I think it's the Christian preachers out there. And then you've got incorrigible delinquency. You know, you got a kid over here, and he's just in trouble all the time. Yeah, you take these incorrigible juvenile delinquents out and stone them to death. Today, you know, if this kid is under 17, he goes out and he kills four or five people. You remember that sniper case up in Virginia? The kid was 17. They said, oh, we can't kill that guy. We can't take him out and stone him to death or give him the death penalty. I don't know. He was out here shooting people, killed about five or six of them. God didn't have any problem with killing juvenile delinquents. We do. Perjury, that's false witness. You know, like O.J. Simpson. Remember that guy Mark Furman lied about O.J. Simpson? God, the Creator God, he has a great sense of humor. He says, whatever it was that the perjurer thought to do to the guy he lied about is what the punishment is for him. Kind of reminds me of those guys down there in Texas. You know, they took this sodomite guy out, tied him on the back of a pickup, and they drug him to death. Just to show you that God has a good sense of humor, there's a law that says that eye for an eye, wound for wound, stripe for stripe, and life for life. We would take those two vigilantes out, tie them on the back of a pickup. Well, of course, after we've had a fair trial, you know, like Saddam Hussein or anybody, we give a fair trial. As soon as we find them guilty, we take them out, and we drag them to death. What if we treated criminals the way the criminals treat their victims? All right, we're out of time. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. You've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and around the world over the Internet. If you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, why don't you go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, talking about what if. Thanks for listening, and until then, good night, friends.